wanted to hang right along with it. In fact, I wanted to do the very quick claps. It's difficult. I don't think a human can clap that fast.
It was already on that before. Your head was done. You didn't see it.
All right, 720 WGN. It is live here in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. It is a Dane in for Matt Bubala until 5 a.m., and we have got an eclectic a virtual cornucopia, a horn of plenty when it comes to the radio side of entertainment, of guests, of topics. You know, you'll be able to dabble. It's like a buffet. Any taste, a little something for everybody, a lot.
You're making me hungry again, boy.
Most people. Dino Tiberi to my right, you know him and love him as my most often recurring and beloved guest and host du jour, and also the physical embodiment of Harry Caray. And this is the time when the spirit stirs a little bit. You feel sort of the movements, the rumblings as we get into another Cub season. We're definitely going to talk some spring training and some of that as well. In the booth, we've got Jess Raines, and it's the musical stylings of Jess Raines, and so she's going to be providing those bumpers, maybe adding in some things too. When it comes to music, she has orchestrated, right? Because she's got the baton. You know, she's up there with blah, blah, blah. We're going to have a musical guest at 3:30, not something we often do. At least I haven't often done it on the overnights because it's difficult to have people that are awake. when I had Zamfir, the pan flute guy, you know, different time zones, and you had him on the phone. I think these people will be in studio. So, Jess, what do we got coming up?
The band is called Ethan Bell Band. So it'll be a two-part acoustic set. They'll be performing some covers and then some original stuff as well.
Songs maybe perhaps we can sing along to today.
I like it. You know, I'm going to say
maybe not.
Nothing against, you know, originals out there, Beatles, Rolling Stones, sure. You got to give them their props, right? They came up with some good songs
absolutely.
All by themselves. But cover bands are fun. You know, if you can get a cover band in, you know, who wants, you know, let's say it's a wedding or, you know, a family function. You want somebody that's going to play Celebration right at the end, or maybe Sweet Caroline, and you can bop, bop, bop along with them.
Yeah, I have one of my favorite bands in the area here, 16 Candles. They play quite a bit of play a lot of covers,
soundtracks of the song. Is it John Hughes? Is that the
It's around that era. They do a lot of everything though.
So they'll do some Don't You Forget About Me.
All songs you know, the ones you can sing along with.
Well, it's gonna be, and what's cool too is to get, it's one thing to have people, you know, musicians are an interesting bunch and they're always exciting to talk to, but to get them like right after a show, they'll be playing a show. This is some hard work, so they're going to put in the time. They're probably playing almost right now, just wrapping up. They're, you know, the roadies are working hard, loading up all the gear,
and they're making their trek from the western suburb down here.
Yeah, we're gonna see them in live in studio.
As it happens,
exciting for that. In and around that, you know, the Oscars are coming up, Dino, and as you turned in your ballot, as I know I did,
of course,
you know, we're wondering if, you know, any of our favorite movies are gonna win. Who knows, right? So we'll go into a little bit of that, you know, some of the movies that are nominated. But also, this is one of those things. We talk about Super Bowl commercials. We'll talk about those things on a regular basis. Moments in time, in history, in entertainment that resonate throughout the ages. And the Oscars are one of those. So Blockbuster Blake Stubbs is going to talk about amazing all-time Oscar moments. The only one I could really think of, well, there's a couple now that I think about it. Wasn't there, that was the Jennifer Lopez green dress. I don't know if that counts as an Oscar moment, right?
Yeah.
You're like, that might have been the Grammys. I don't know. And then you've also got, what comes to mind is, you know, Marlon Brando. Right? Didn't he have?
He sent up someone to accept his award.
Yeah, like right. Didn't he have like a chieftain or an Indian princess come up and accept the award to showcase the oppression of our native peoples? Or I mean, there was a political statement. Oftentimes there is, and I'm sure we'll see that this Sunday as well. Blockbuster Blake Stubbs is going to join us at 2:30. We're going to go into movies in general. I got a chance to see Black Panther, Dino. I know it was on your homework list.
I did not get a chance to see it, but it is still on my list, so I'm not gonna admit, Blake, hoping I'm listening, I didn't see it yet.
Yeah, it's okay. I saw it enough to be able to, there's a lot of things you would like in there, you know.
Oh, I'm looking forward to seeing it.
There's a cameo by Steve Trout is in there.
Steve Trout.
He is not in there. I was trying to trick you, and then by the end you're like, hey,
do like a quiz to see if I'm paying attention.
No, but by the end of the movie, if at the end you think about it, you're like, hey, I don't remember seeing Steve Trout, then you know you've succeeded. If throughout the entire movie you keep nudging me and saying like, hey, where's Steve?
Where's Rainbow? Right. Should be in there somewhere. Right.
Then you know maybe.
Crafty left-hander.
Maybe Panther has failed. But so we're going to talk with Blake a little bit also. And then since we are preempted by the amazing, I think Chicago White Sox are on tomorrow. And so we've got a visit with NHRA legend Ron Capps is going to be. He's the driver of the iconic Napa top Nitro funny car for Don Schumacher Racing. So we'll have him on. And then, Dino, have you ever been to World of Wheels?
I have not. Another thing that's I've heard about it many times in the past, but never got there.
I just on a lot of lists for people's bucket list, Dino Tiberi bucket list. Yeah. Is World of Wheels in there? Maybe page two or three?
Well, it's down the list a little bit, but no.
You got Great Wall of China.
I mean, there's been a million things that I've heard. They used to hear the ads for them all the time. You know, the World of Wheels or however that went.
And, on fire.
Yeah, and it's Big Daddy Don Garlitz. Yeah. Yeah, you know, Cha-Cha Bull Dowdy. You know, you hear that back in the day. But no, I've never been there, but I'd like to. I can't wait to hear about this.
You're ever going to pick a time to go. This is it.
When is it actually running?
The 9th through the 11th. So it is coming up. We're going to have two tickets. You unfortunately cannot win them. Jess, I'm so sorry. You cannot win them either. It'll be full admission for all of us, really, honestly, to get into World of Wheels. But Dale Earnhardt Jr. is going to be there. Also, get this. This is so great. Bo Duke. John Schneider is going to be there.
Is he going to be there with the... General Lee is going to be there?
I think he'll be there with a socially conscious, updated General Lee.
I actually know someone that has a General Lee.
Because General Lee is kind of persona non grata these days. You know, back then he was a part of a car and he had the whole crazy, and now it's all different. You know, yeah. you can't have a show
can't
like that.
Can't have anything. Yeah, no, absolutely not.
Yeah, so we're going to talk with them. I'm trying to think, and Jess has got some other topics too. Jess, any extra topics that you think of that we're going to hit on? 312-981-7200. Of course, listeners, you can get in. Here's one I wanted to talk about. The kids today, and I don't mean this as like the curmudgeon-y old guy I'm definitely quickly becoming.
Get off my lawn!
No, my actual kids today at Target bought a game. They paid $19 for a card game, and I'm thinking that's way overpriced, right? $7-$8. Yeah, and we tried to do some price matching. I'm not great at it, but we tried. But $19.99, a game called, and this is as insensitive as it gets, and Jeff from CatSpot, I hope you're not listening, it's called Exploding Kittens.
What?
Yeah.
What?
It's called Exploding, that's the name.
Oh, boy.
I don't know if there's a label on it. A lot of words on the side of the box. Some of those are no kittens were harmed in the making of this game, I'm guessing. But Jess, have you ever heard of the game Exploding Kittens?
I have not.
Okay, so we're going to do some research on it. But they just loved it, and they've been wanting it for a long time. She's been asking. Eleanor has been saying, hey, Dad, can I have Exploding
Kittens? It's come a long way from a barrel full of monkeys to Exploding Kittens. Yeah. What the heck happened there?
Those monkeys, that was a really... Can you believe we were placated by the barrel full of monkeys? It's just monkeys with twisters. So when it comes to games, share yours throughout the course of the day. There are so many out there, 312-981-7200. You can call in. You can text them in. You can send pictures of the games. If you've got any vintage games, Monopoly still, I think, is popular as ever, right?
Yeah, that's one of them. I could think of a ton of other ones. That
Parcheesi.
Oh, yeah. Fourscore.
Euchre.
Ginnip-ginnop.
Your favorite games of all time. We have Exploding Kittens added to that list.
Exploding Kittens.
At least for the family. 312-981-7200. We'll get you on. You can share them live. It's an exciting stuff that we're going to have. Blake's coming up a little bit after 2:30. We're going to take a break right now. It is Dane in for Matt Bubala here on 720.
It was a big group of people. And we did have to hide from the police because there was a lot of illegal gambling, though I won't admit to anything.
No, of course not. As you should not. Even, right. I don't know what the statute of limitations on hungry hippo violations. Yeah. Now, for the listeners out there that don't remember, and some of these things you remember the words, but it was, and correct me if I'm wrong, Hungry Hippos was, and Roger, of course, as a defending champion, there was marbles in the middle, and then you had
the hippo ate or grabbed the marbles and pulled them back to you.
Yeah, you basically just kept slapping a handle as hard as you could, as often as you could. So you could get carpal tunnel. A lot of guys had plastic burns because they were the plastic handles because they kept hitting it. A couple of guys broke their hands, actually, at the wrist.
Well, it was
dangerous.
You do that in a little super toe, Raj, and that's it. You're done.
Well, Hungry Hippos was, we talk about different incarnations of games. Slap the Handle was really the original name for it. And
there was a similar game. Now, I'm being serious. There was a similar game where you did the same thing, but instead of hippos, they were plastic hands that would flip up and down, and you were slapping, I think, cards. I think you slapped a card or something.
I do remember this? That. I do.
Yeah, it was a similar routine. of the game.
Yeah, so I just can't.
It was
think
a
of
spinoff, kind of like a TV show, you know.
Well, we're gonna share some of these, you know, either the greatest or ungreatest or most infamous games of all time that people loved and people texted. And someone texted in Operation. When we come back from the news, we'll talk a little bit about that. We'll ask Blake Stubbs too.
I was the figure, by the way, for that.
Oh, are you serious?
Yeah. What? Because it's an old game.
Roger needs to have his gallbladder removed. Dig in.
Back in the day, it was very costly.
Back in the day, Roger, and again, and congratulations on the anniversary. It was exciting to see all that on social media.
Thank you.
But that would have been a great back in the day pickup line. You know, like, hey, you know that game Operation?
You just double thumb the gallbladder
right here. You just
pull out my gallbladder.
Play connect the scars. All right.
You just hand a lady an oversized pair of tweezers, and you just like go to town. All right.
It's a live version.
Wow.
Really live.
Right now, it is a little past 2:30 here on 720 WGN, and it is news time with the incomparable Roger Badish. I hear some clapping. Now, this is more of the slow clap, right? Yeah. 720 WGN. It is Dane in for Matt Bubala until 5 a.m. today. Dino Tiberi to my right. Jess Rains. And with, well, when you, he, we've revisited the glory days of his Hungry Hippo championships. And, of course, you know, that in the days before.
Sanctioned champion.
In the days before, you know, cable television and unlimited satellites and all that kind of stuff, you know, the to be the cover person, the main, the physical embodiment of the Operation game, which was a huge, huge, huge hit. That's some pretty heavy street cred.
Not many people can have that claim to fame, but apparently our own Roger Badish does.
Yeah, well, I've got the only trophy. They shut it down. They shut the action down shortly thereafter. I've never been able to defend my championship. That was quite a number of years ago.
Oh, man.
Who knew?
He was the influence for such a successful game.
And that game was tough. Here's the reasons why it was tough. You can think about this. You know, kids, you know, you'd improvise over time and you'd just deal with things. And batteries were an elusive, mysterious thing. When I was a kid, you could get a toy and it would have batteries with it. And then typically when they would go out, you were kind of on your own, you know. And
Mom, can you give me some batteries? No, you only got the two that came with the doll. That's it.
Well, so for Operation, it would be the point where we would play, but we didn't have the battery any. So his little nose didn't turn red. Nothing happened. So we'd have
Did you have the designated? Is that what you were going to say?
Well, we would have a person that would decide. Hey, you or honor system, which rarely worked.
Oh.
Right? Like, no, I didn't.
I thought you had the guy sitting off on the side who the only job he had was. Bzzz. Just, you know, wait a minute. Is that a. Yep.
Looks like he got up. He hit the sidewall. No, that's it.
Roger, you know, you may be right there. We may have built in the whole, like a little bit of the noise. Otherwise, it was like, hey, you know. Maybe a bzzz.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know
that
what
game was hard. And then here's the thing, too, is you would, just like you brought up Barrel of Monkeys, you know, we had a very, very sad and getting sadder all the time, clinically depressed Barrel of Monkeys, that over time you only had like
they
two
escaped.
Monkeys.
Yeah,
well, right, you didn't have them.
Yeah, they got out and ran away.
It wasn't even a barrel of monkeys. It was bottom of the barrel of monkeys.
They came over and started taunting Roger on the
this monkey business, you know.
So for Operation, we would inevitably lose the bones. We would have to throw other items in there. Yeah.
Couldn't even throw me a bone.
Yeah,
jeez.
And so,
Who knew the cross? These cross.
And since at the time, guys, I did not own a 3D printer. I could not make an additional funny bone. And so you have like a. I don't know if it was like a just a. It wasn't like a piece of food, but maybe like a paper. I don't know what it was. So you throw something that fit
piece
in
of
there.
Toast that fell in while you were eating it over the game.
You know, I wonder. I know they wanted to keep the cost down, but. They should have added some sort of adapter for those games where you didn't need to get a battery if you didn't want one. You know, you throw a plug in there.
The fine folks at Duracell would beg to differ.
Well, sure, of course they would. But back then.
They send that rabbit after you.
You wouldn't have lost all the pieces, and Roger would have been illuminated.
It's like
that. Yeah,
shut
off.
Yeah. Exxon Mobil folks saying, electric cars. You know,
could have put like a crank on the sign. You wind it up like a Victrola. And
it
would
go for another half an hour.
You know,
that'd be cool.
Roger, you're the enemy of the corporate.
I'm the one that started it, not him.
Well, he's like,
supporting you.
Yeah, Dino, you guys, you were the Ed Begley Jr.'s before his time. All right, now here's the thing. Is a guy that knows more about Ed Begley Jr.'s career and the powerful impact that he's had.
More than he needs to know.
on the world of, I don't know if he's ever even been in a movie. I know, of course, been in some TV shows.
Oh, he's been in movies before.
Is the one and only, and he needs a proper introduction. You know, there's so many ways. This is the time where he's up all night. He's up. He's just caffeinated. They're administering all sorts of adrenaline shots to him because it's just nonstop excitement as we close in towards another amazing Oscars celebration and of course the awards. The one and only blockbuster Blake Stubbs. Blake, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, guys. Yes, I am caffeinated, but I have a nice glass of ice water next to me just to make sure I stay hydrated and ready to go.
You got the chaser.
At a moment's notice. I'm here to. It's my coffee chaser, so to speak.
That's the one that slows him down after he's been going for a while.
Yes, and you are correct. Like, this is a very stressful weekend for me because, like, I'm trying to see everything possible that I need. Because, look, I mean, when you get down to the Oscar stuff, you always run into like things like the short animated feature, you know, films and the short live action films. And if you're lucky, there are theaters that will, you know, batch those all together and let you go see them for like a very, you know, reasonable price. But like trying to get a hold of things, because some of this stuff is available online, and, you know, like I'm trying to use every spare minute I can so that when I walk into Oscar Sunday, I'm ready to go. Because it's a big day for me. And I don't bet money on it, but I love being, you know, the guy that knows it.
Well, here's the thing, too, right? Because you got to have your hand on the pulse of so much of it, and there could be an errant question from somebody that says, like, hey, what about that, you know, best foreign film dubbed in animated animal feature, you know, and then you've got to know all of those categories, and it isn't always, you know, easy to have your hand on the pulse of each and every one of those, but you do it. And here's the other thing too, is you are that guy with your predictions, and you'll be on with our good mutual friend John Hansen tomorrow, because Blake doesn't stop, and you'll be going through some of those predictions and all of that Oscar stuff. Is you're the guy that predicts, I don't want to say the apocalyptic end of the world, but maybe that earthquake, right? And you want to be right. You know, you want to know it all.
I do. You know, I just recently did a podcast with a friend of mine who does this for fun. He loves films. And every year he tries to bring me in to talk about strictly Best Picture, the Best Picture category in its entirety. So what we do is we do this long form sort of, you know, breakdown, give every film about 30 minutes, you know, a fair shake. And then at the end, we sort of break it down in terms of ranking, like how we felt about them. And look, that takes hours to produce because you want to give every film equal footing. And you want to make sure that, you know, first of all, we've seen every film, because you can't go into that sort of discussion and not have, you know, the wherewithal to hold your own in every aspect of it. But at the same time, like I'm sitting here watching this stuff. And this year, particularly, Best Picture is a very tough category. Probably the toughest it's been since, I would say, about 2009, when they instituted this whole, like, up to 10 nominees in the category rule, where they changed the whole scope of how that category works. And I'm really excited for Oscar Sunday because of that. Because, you know, I mean, in the last few years, there's been some controversy. There was the Oscar So White controversy. There's been, you know, not enough women are being nominated in categories that they should be, and rightfully so. Et cetera, et cetera. I mean, it goes on and on, and you can fall down this slippery slope of what they've done wrong. Whereas this year, there is a very wealthy like palette of films that, you know, audience members of every type of, you know, preference and taste of what they want to see and what they should see, even more so, like stuff that they should have access to. It's on display. It's ready for you to go see it, and it's a good time to go to the movies at this point in time of year. And Oscar Sunday is Sunday, but up till now, you've had every opportunity to maybe get out there and see something that you otherwise would miss.
Yeah.
Or not, you know, give a fair shake to.
Yeah, it's cool because, you know, you look at sometimes there are years and you kind of hit on it, Blake, that, you know, there's a foregone conclusion. There's some movie that's just taking the world by storm, or some actor, it's their time, or, you know, and it just feels like that, you know, these are human beings that are voting on it. The vibe is just there that this is your winner. And you'll have a lot of, you know, pundits come out and say, like, hey, this is what's going to happen. It's nice to see it be kind of wide open, right? And there's a nice kind of group of pictures. I know you're going to talk with John at length about a lot of those things, so we don't want to take too much of the thunder away from that. When we come back from the break, we're going to talk about, now the Oscars is the kind of thing that you've been covering since, I know your mom, she would hold her abdomen, right, when Blake was yeah, in the womb, right, up to the screen, which was right, then a nice warm tube television, and so you could get in some of that, because she didn't want you missing anything
through osmosis. She knew
that your cinematic destiny, but the Oscars itself has always been, and you kind of, again, you touched on a little bit of it, that it's this place not only to highlight America's great films and its great actors, but also social consciousness, you know, whatever kind of the issues of the day are, you know, some, right, of these very important things that are happening in society, and some of the Oscar presentations have been places for that. So when we come back from this break, we're going to talk about some of the biggest Oscars of all time. And also, too, here's the thing, you think the movie's going to be great and that's why it's getting nominated, but sometimes an Oscar nod can kind of give birth to an entire life and audience for a film, and certainly for an actor, that it didn't have. We'll talk about some of those through history as well. So hold tight, Blake. We're going to get right back to you. It's Dane in for Matt here on 720 WGN. I don't know if I hear clapping. Maybe there is some in there somewhere.
No, this is gorillas.
Oh, that's right. 720 WGN. It is Dane in for Matt Bubala until 5 a.m. today. I do have Dino Tiberi to my right. Jess Rains spinning the hits in the booth. And when it comes to hits in the movie world, this is their night to shine and be recognized for all time. It is a historical thing, and it's the kind of thing that once your film or your acting role is, certainly I think even nominated, but when you win an Oscar, for the rest of your life, you'll be introduced as an Oscar winner, a guy with his hand on the pulse of so much of it. To talk about some of the greatest Oscar moments throughout history is on the line with the one and only, our guy, Blockbuster Blake Stubbs. Welcome back to the show.
Well, thanks for having me, of course. This is a big time of year for me. I'm a huge nerd as far as it goes for the Oscars, films in general, of course. But I think it goes without saying that whether you agree with how the awards have been handed out over the last few years or in their entirety, the history of the entire awards ceremony, the Oscars have always been held as the highest accolade one can earn in this industry that is filmmaking, for either acting or makeup and hairstyling or directing or writing or producing. You know what I mean? It's the pinnacle. It's what everybody wants. Everybody wants that little gold dude that they can put on their toilet so that when their guests show up, they can say, yeah, I want an Oscar. And some people have won tons of Oscars and you can't name them.
And you can't even get into their bathroom.
Right. Yeah. No, you can't. It's lock and key. But some have also been nominated, more times than Susan Lucci ever was for Emmys and never won. It's such a unique and interesting approach to the way things are awarded. Because, again, when you win an Oscar, or you're even, I believe, if you're even nominated for an Oscar, you're a member of the Academy and you can vote, and your vote counts for who wins or who doesn't win the following year. So it's this ever-growing and evolving system, and at times it's been taken to task for being outdated, and it needs to update its rules. I believe in the last few years it's done a pretty good job of doing that.
Blake, I wanted to get your thoughts on this, because you mentioned it too, is that it is, it is the highest kind of award and recognition that you can have, but there are certain either categories of filmmaking that have received high praise, but just won't be in line, yes, based on just kind of the traditional ways that the Academy and its voters go about accepting. And so let's say if you're, if you're doing an action film or a comedy or something like that, and some of those are very well done and I think Oscar worthy, but it doesn't seem like they ever get the nods. Like, what's your thoughts on that? Just how they choose the roles and what kind of movies typically find themselves nominated for Oscars?
Well, I think that in the past, there's always the exception to the rule. You mentioned comedies, for example, is a big one. For me, A Fish Called Wanda is always going to be the exception to the rule. The Oscars have sort of not given the fair due to the comedic world of filmmaking. And sometimes comedy sends the biggest message. It reaches the biggest audience. It has the biggest impact. In that particular film, A Fish Called Wanda, Kevin, Kline won Best Supporting Actor in that film for a comedic role. And this is I've seen this man live. I saw him play Cyrano in New York on Broadway, and he is probably, pound for pound, the finest actor I've ever seen play anything. But he played a comedic role, and that was sort of a departure from what the Academy is used to awarding. I think that this year you have what I would call, they're not front-facing, punchline-oriented comedies, but the likes of Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, which I would call a dark comedy, or Get Out, which I would call a horror comedy, but more in the end on the line of horror in a lot of ways. But at the same time, it's still outlandishly funny, what needs to be, because of its brilliance. They are in the Best Picture category. So on occasion, the Academy gets it right, and they sort of, you know, branch out, and they welcome in different elements of filmmaking. But in the past, they have. You said it. And I mean, you could go through, what, at the 90th? You could go through a lot of years of different times where the Academy is just flat out ignored great comedic types of films. And that is something that I think they've grown to appreciate a bit more, but it's slow. It's always been a slow burn with that.
And it seems like, too, there are certain people that are, I think, comedic people, you know, that are thought of as funny guys or ladies that sort of are right in the club. And I'm doing the air quotes here, where they're sort of, you know, like a Tom Hanks, right? It's the kind of guy that, you know, he's known as a funny person, obviously an incredible actor, but he's sort of, you know, he's a guy that they can accept that can do this. The other side of it too, and, you know, oftentimes we have talked, you love Die Hard, you love action films. Who doesn't, right? You know,
I do.
A well done movie can be, and some of them are great, and I would consider them to be on the acting side. Certainly just on the success side, and I don't know how you even qualify. I know they've got different categories for special effects, but Oscar worthy for the action movies, and action movies typically don't find themselves you know, winning that award on that night.
They really don't. And again, if you go into get this year Best Picture category, I'm just going to pull out a particular film, Dunkirk, a World War II film that is set around an incredibly, you know, epic in terms of its scale, wartime event that has incredibly kinetic editing, which I actually, if we're just going to throw out a couple of little minor predictions here, I think that, I shouldn't say minor because it's a very specific craft, but I think Dunkirk is a strong candidate for best editing and best cinematography this year. I don't know if it'll win cinematography, but I think it falls in that category of like creating this chaotic and enveloping, you know, environment where audience members could have sat in an IMAX theater and felt like they were there. They created that, and they did it excellently. And Hans Zimmer's work on the score, I think, only elevated that even further. So, like, a war film is the kind of action film that would be considered. You know, Saving Private Ryan is another one. Yep. It didn't win Best Picture. It lost to Shakespeare in Love, but it should have been considered, and a great many people, myself included, I know, would have argued that Shakespeare in Love should not have won Best Picture that year, and it probably should have been either Saving Private Ryan or potentially Life is Beautiful, depending on the camp that you know, belong in. But at the same time, you know, a war film is the type of action film that they would, you know, appeal to, as opposed to an action film like a Die Hard.
You know, some of these movies, and you think about them, they are the kind that just stick with you, that you remember kind of where you were when you saw it for the first time. You know, it's like a Saving Private Ryan is one of those, right, that I think falls into that category. And also too, is there's a way to go about, you almost need kind of a tour guide on how to best, right, present your film for Oscar consideration. There's a way to do it, kind of almost like a political campaign. There's a way to do it and there's a way not to do it. You got to know the ropes in there if you want to get that thing done.
No, and that's actually very true. For those that are not in the know on how the Academy does things, and again, unless you open it up and read the criteria, you're not going to know. The easiest way to explain it is that when these films play in a theater, they have to play in a certain number of theaters to be even considered level one. That's the first tier of criteria. The second tier is they have to have a lot of money taken out for ads, and you might have seen these around the internet. They're called for your consideration. That is a base criteria to allow something to be nominated for an Academy Award. That requires a lot of money. That requires studio backing, studio marketing. They have to be ready to pursue that when the film hits and gets the buzz that it so rightly, you know, probably deserves. And, you know, look, hey, people who make these movies know if they're good or not. So the studios are, that are backing them or have produced them are ready to say, hey, you know what? For an example would be Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. They know that the likes of, you know, a Sam Rockwell and a Frances McDormand are going to be nominated for, or should be nominated for Best Actress, Best Supporting Actor and Best Actress respectively. So they're going to champion that. Anything else they get, maybe, and I'm just throwing this out hypothetically, maybe a means of them saying, look, hey, if we're going to go, like, for these two categories, we should go for all of them. And now the film is nominated for Best Picture, Best Director, Best Original Screenplay, Best Cinematography. Do you see what I'm saying? Like, this sort of snowballs. But a lot of money goes into just getting these films considered for nomination. So sometimes people, you know, when the nominations are released, they get upset and they say, oh, this movie that I love, that was one of my favorites all year, wasn't even considered. What those people may not know, and I will admit, I was one of these people many years ago. I had no clue. They don't know that there's strict criteria that the Academy has to make sure films and studios that produce them adhere to even be considered, and then make sure that you're even on a ballot to be nominated and then maybe potentially win an Oscar.
Yeah.
There's a lot of holes and a lot of loops and a lot of, you know, just ladders you got to climb. And make sure that you fit that criteria.
And then sometimes it's, you know, you feel like you've got the thing that's going on this year. You've got every, but then there's other people in line that maybe, right. You brought up Susan Lucci, and we also know she's great. I think some of her best work was done on those progressive or insurance ads. I think she's so funny. Anyway, but obviously she was, you know, great and deserving of an award. And you think about kind of this whole strategic campaign like a Leonardo DiCaprio did with the Revenant. I mean, that was like where you get the buzz out, you do the thing, you have everybody, and it's a foregone conclusion that this is what exactly he made that movie specifically to win that Oscar so that he could go to the bathroom and have it sitting right next to him. When we got to take a break and get to some news. When we come back, we're going to spend a tiny bit more time with you, Blake, if we can. We want to get some of those, you know, a couple amazing moments in Oscar history. We talked about some early on in the program. Then we want to get your favorite game of all time too. So stay tuned for that. Right now, though, it is Roger was the body for Operation.
That's right.
So it's straight up 3 o'clock right now. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. If you're an Amazon Echo user, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. It is straight up 3 o'clock news time. Here's Roger Badish. And Roger in the News was brought to us by Chocolate Wine and Spirits Expo.com.
No diggity, no doubt.
There's no clapping. I think we've transitioned into a tambourine. These are all tambourine songs. Thank you, Jess Rains.
I like how you did the announcement of the sponsor, and right after you said it, they went, mm-hmm.
That's what you want, especially if it's a food-related one. That's what you want people saying. You don't want people saying, like, ugh. Yuck. Yeah. 720 WGN, it is Dane in for Matt Bubala until 5 a.m. here in the Allstate Showcase Studio. And on the line with us, we've got he is prepping in Command Central, many monitors up. He's got schematics, whiteboards. He's in a lab coat. He's doing research and development as we prepare for yet another Oscars coming up. And Blockbuster Blake Stubbs, welcome back to WGN first.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Yes, as Dane pointed out, I'm a lot like Charlie Day in It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia with my red strings, and I'm not a smoker, but the caffeine effect is probably much like the chain smoking he does. He looks very frantic, and he's trying to piece it all together. It's a great, great comedic moment in television. It's much akin to the way I am around this time of year.
Well, here's
those that are interested.
We kind of teased it before we went to the news that we're going to talk about some of the most memorable moments and important moments in Oscar history, and who could forget? I know we all remember being glued to our talkie, right, as we watched Charlie Chaplin get a 12-minute standing ovation, right, when back in our black and white television days. And then also too is, remember Marlon Brando when he refused to accept the, that's when you know you're big, when you can win the Oscar and like you
send somebody else.
I don't have time for that. You know, that's when you know you've totally made it to, you know, like the top level, the elite status, right, in the movie world.
Yeah, that was in 1973 for The Godfather. He actually sent out a young woman by the name of, and I might butcher her name, I'm going to try not to, Sachin Littlefeather. She went out to accept, and the whole speech was her just saying that, you know, Marlon Brando is not going to accept this award on the grounds that he does not appreciate the way that Native Americans have been treated in the film industry. Plain and simple. That was it. And off she went. And it was one of those, you know, very political moments. But to be quite honest with you, very fair moments. Hollywood and the Academy, I have no problem calling them out because I'm not really a part of that industry, hasn't always been great about that. There have been a few films in the last, you know, decade or so that I think have done a good job of bringing that presence to the forefront, especially in this last year, the movie Wind River in particular, and then Frozen River. I know I'm mentioning rivers, but Frozen River was another one with Misty Upham, who tragically, you know, passed away in the last couple of years, but her performance was downright stellar, and I think it should not go unnoticed. She acted opposite Melissa Leo, who did win an Oscar for her performance in that film. So, yeah, I mean, it's the statement in that particular instance that you mentioned, with a little more context and understanding and knowledge of the scenario, other than the fact that it was for The Godfather, I think sort of speaks to the way the Oscars have been called out over the last few years. In particular.
Well, here's the thing, too, and I know Jess is fiercely looking for bumpers that have the Little River Band included in them in order to coincide with the thing. Was that one of the first times where there had been a political, kind of social, kind of societal statement being made at the... Because now it seems like for a lot of these people that... Cause you figure on the acting side, and they've all got, you know, voices in social media, but you're seeing more and more, it's almost like you're missing something if they're not utilizing the program and their opportunity to make whatever statement they do. You got to figure for an actor, you're typically playing other people, and that that whole political statement or your own views on a thing, probably not in the script, right? So you have to take these opportunities when you are
right.
yourself with a national audience to kind of get your views out there. Is that what you're seeing?
Well, I think that as far as I can remember, most overt or blatant political statements, that was one of the first key ones that I came across or remembered from my recollection. However, there were a few awards actually given, namely in 1940, Hattie McDaniel's Best Supporting Actress, you know, win for Gone with the Wind, being the first black actor to win an Oscar, period. And then secondly, in 1964, when Sidney Poitier won Best Actor for Lilies of the Field, was another one. You know, the Academy has awarded wonderful performances, rightfully so, on many occasions. And I don't want that to be forgotten by the general audience. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like that's one of those things where it's been lost over time, and they go through phases and cycles, and you can call them out here, but then the next year they rebound, or they do this, or they do that. And then, you know, in the case of 73, I think what Brando was trying to do was just say, look, I don't need this award. I mean, I'm Marlon Brando. Like, I don't need this award. And so that he wanted to make light of a very particular issue, and he did so without causing an incredibly negative scene. He just sent someone to respectfully give a statement. She did, and off she went, and that was it.
Well, but so powerful, though. I mean, to think about it, that so many years
exactly.
later,
yes.
it's the kind of thing we all look back as sort of that standard bearer for, and you mentioned it, you know, in kind of a tasteful way, to be able to get the message across in a way, and then also didn't
right.
kind of, and here's the thing, and you have to be, depending on your career, you're almost obligated, you know, even for yourself and your, you know, general level of success, you're obligated to almost deliver that message yourself. When you're Marlon Brando and you don't even need to do it, you don't even need to be there, because typically he could have said, yeah, okay, well, I'll spend part of my speech talking about the Indians and how they're, right. you know, they're Native Americans oppressed or not utilized in films. Instead, he doesn't even have to go.
What a better way to do it, though, than send a representative, actual Native American.
But, you know, you have to be Marlon Brando to not even, because I think just the nature of, you know, actors, and I think when you get to that point, I don't know how you don't show up, you know, or even if you have an important message, you think, well, who better to deliver it than me, Marlon Brando. But when you're like that big, and this is not the later Marlon Brando. What was that crazy movie where he was on an island somewhere with the Island of Dr. Moreau?
The Island of Dr. Moreau.
Yeah.
And honestly, that's a short story, or I should say a novella or a book that a lot of people have read and enjoy, but like the film adaptation just was a huge misfire, and it had great talent attached. It had David Thewlis, it had Val Kilmer, Marlon Brando, you know, like every actor just kind of ended up doing their own thing, and you kind of see how this film did not play the way it should have. again, misfire is just the word to use for it. But yeah, you're right. It was crazy. It was goofy. It didn't really fit the way that it should have for a man of his talent, or his co-star's talent.
Well, and Blake, the point I was making is that this wasn't that Marlon Brando that was like kind of, you know, later
in aloof.
Yeah, this was like Godfather. I mean, this was like him right in the primest of the prime.
Right, and it was pre-Apocalypse Now, where, you know, his relationship with Francis Ford Coppola, who directed The Godfather and Apocalypse Now, pretty much fell apart. He showed up to the set of Apocalypse Now. You know, we're getting into movie trivia here, but he said showed up to the set of Apocalypse Now overweight, didn't know his lines, did not look the part, did not play the part, did not know how to play the part. And, you know, Francis Ford Coppola, I believe, almost died making that movie. Martin Sheen actually had a heart attack and nearly died making that movie. That movie almost took lives. I think that's what a lot of people need to take away from it when you learn about Apocalypse Now. In fact, there's a whole documentary that was made by, I believe it was Coppola's wife at the time. It was basically His Heart of Darkness, which is a parallel to the story by Joseph Conrad that the film is based off of. And it was taking on this idea of, like, look, we're going to film what's going on behind the scenes, and we're going to show how hard this movie was to make in an authentic location with actors succumbing to these, you know, external forces that were causing it to be such a hard thing. Francis was putting all of his own money. He practically nearly bankrupted himself making it. And the whole, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's just this snowball effect of when you make films, I don't think the general audience always understands what directors, writers, producers, actors go through to make them. They are called works of art for a reason, and sometimes there are, you know, exquisite portrayals or excellent direction with brilliant execution or cinematography that is just so perfect, and yet there can be more to it than meets the eye. There can be a deeper story. There can be more conflict that one might know about, and it makes it interesting.
Yeah,
it's not just a thing on a screen. It can be more than that.
Well, because you look at how much time and effort and months, you know, and all of those personalities, and so very little of what is, you know, done. You know, months of work, you know, down to making what is about 2 hours of entertainment. There's always a great backstory, and I think that specifically would be a great separate issue, maybe in a future show for us to, like, you and I to kind of just talk specifically about that movie, because you've got, you know, just a pivotal point in the filmmaking world. You've got so many kind of iconic personalities on the acting side, and of course Francis Ford Coppola. One of the listeners know too is that Blake, you and I are going to be getting a chance, I think it's April 15th or so, to interview. We're going to sit down with him and we're going to talk about that, so we'll have to bring up some of these things as best we can, kind of taking him back down on memory lane as Francis Ford Coppola is here in the Chicago area.
Questions.
Yeah.
Yes. Very much so.
And so here's the thing, too, is as we let you go, and we know that you're going to be getting a little bit of rest, and I know that you're going to be on with John. We want to promote that. You'll be on with our mutual friend John Hansen tomorrow, kind of breaking down all of the predictions and snubs. But for those people who want to keep up with you on a regular basis, all things movies, not just these, but pretty much anything, where can they go?
Oh, the easiest way is Twitter. Find me at Blake Stubbs on Twitter. I love talking about cinema, especially if, you know, I throw out a review of a movie and then you go see it and you want to banter back and forth. You want somebody to bounce ideas off or observations or things you like or didn't like. I'm all about it. I think cinema is a key point of conversation, and I don't want anybody to think just because I say this, that's the end-all, be-all, and that's all I think. If you can help open my eyes or I can help open yours, that's where to find me. So Twitter, at Blake Stubbs. Let's talk movies all the time. I'm all about it.
Yeah, open eyes at all times. So, Blake, thanks so much. Everybody get on board and get with Blake this weekend for sure, and then send your thoughts to him, especially as the Oscars are happening. I'm guessing you're going to be live tweeting as well. So, Blake, thanks, and thanks for jumping on the air tonight.
Thanks so much, and you guys have a great night, and absolutely always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure.
Thanks, Blake.
Wait a minute, Blake. Are you still there?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Last thing, your favorite game of all time. We're talking about different games. I know Exploding Kittens is not it. It just came out, but what is it?
Are you talking about video games or board games?
Board games. Or some
board
kind of...
Board games.
Yeah.
Okay, I got an easy answer for you. I'm an only child, so when I got to play with family and friends, it was always a treat for me because, you know, I could easily entertain myself with, you know, a Nintendo. But when I played board games, there was a game I played with my family called The Omega Virus. And it was kind of a sci-fi, you're exploring a space station, you're trying to stop a virus from eliminating, you know, the human race, basically.
Same virus Dane has right now.
But it was a board game with a little computer that came and had to sit center point on the game board. And it would sort of direct you where to go, and it would interact with different players based on where they were. It was this really cool, involved, like, you had to, it would take like 10 to 30 minutes to play, but at the same time, it was very gripping, you know. And again, I'm not the most versed person on sci-fi, and I know that there's somebody out there that knows the game I'm talking about, The Omega Virus. It was so fun, and I enjoyed it, and I still have like a mint condition version of it that I've always held on to, because yes, I thought, you know what, that's a game I want to keep. And I wasn't one to keep those types of things, but that particular game, a lot of great memories.
312-981-7200. If anybody has a picture they can send, you can text it and you can talk. The Omega Virus, of course, you know, Blake Dino, we know this. He couldn't just say Yahtzee, right? He had to say The Omega Virus. And it's, and of course, the destruction of the human race was also right. built into the, you gotta keep
I would expect nothing less out of Blake.
Gotta keep
actually,
it fun, right? You don't just want to like get to the end of the Peppermint Mountain or whatever, right? You gotta you gotta save the world. All right, thanks, Blake. Get some sleep. We'll talk to you soon.
And you bet. Thanks, guys.
Oops, sorry, I snipped him a little bit there. It is a little bit after, it was like 3:20 or so. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we've got a ton of your suggestions, thoughts. I walked down memory lane. There are some games that I know and loved. I completely forgot that they were there. Dino, I know you have some as well. So 312-981-7200, your favorite board games of all time, old ones, even some new ones, you can share it. It's Dane and for Matt here on 720 WGN. Like a Blink 182 kind of? Is it?
I'm not sure. I don't know this one.
No, this is great. No, but it's added a little element of trivia to it. We're trying to figure out what it is or what the mindset is. Jess Rains in the booth. Dane in for Matt until 5 a.m. And I do have Dino Tiberi to my right as well. And we are talking about people have been chiming in with their favorite games of all time. I was surprised today. Went to Target. My daughter had been asking for the new very hot and popular card game. It was $19.99. We tried to price match. There just was no way around it. So this is when you can command, you know, $20, Dino, for some, you know, laminated pieces of paper. I don't care what they say, right? These were not oversized. They were not 3D. They did not have batteries. They did not. They weren't even endorsed by a Roger Badish. This was just a card game, right? But it's
didn't pay me enough.
Right. I'm sure they approached you, right?
They tried to. It was in a dark alley.
Yeah, you know, and plus you have standards, right? And just
I do.
The unsettling title of Exploding Kittens just seems like something like, I don't know. I don't know if that fits with
they
my
just
brand.
Just crossed the line with
yeah.
me.
Yeah. We did have a 630 person say Exploding Kittens is just a lot of fun. It's a silly game, and it's a blast.
It's fun for everyone.
Yeah, the title's just right. Anyway, but so from the 773, the game Mealborns.
I love Mealborns.
I remember there was
as a little kid, it was one of the few games we had in the house that I could play with my folks because they always played bridge.
Yeah,
and we were left out, and so we played Mealborns. I love that game. That's how I learned French.
Roulez.
Yeah, I mean, it was one of those things, right, where you. I mean, I think that's a testament to just how universally popular and playable that game is. I loved that game playing it, but right, it was in, you know, it's a French game, right? And it's all about, is it like, it's, you're taking an auto trip. It's all about, you get a flat tire, an accident and all that kind of stuff.
And it was just, you pick up a card, you look at what you got, you add up the points, whatever, and you throw a card out. And eventually you get the most points.
And you get to stop other people. You could throw a flat tire on them. You put an accident down.
It was great.
Yeah, I played that game many times, too many to count.
Another one that we played as kids was Life.
Yeah. Oh, that was the best ever.
I love getting the little pegs to stick in the cars. A blue one or a pink one.
Right, because here's the thing. Right?
Now you have a baby.
It was, I mean, in a word, right? Is there a game that encapsulated itself or really, really just kind of said, you know, what it was and did what it said than Life? Because didn't you have like a career too? You get to be you get to be a banker.
Sure.
You get to be a banker. You get to be, you know, whatever else would be the opposite of
five
that.
And you work in a fast food joint. I mean,
I don't know that was one of the options.
You became operations spokesperson.
That was
right. Oh, look, I got an endorsement deal for the operation game.
Roger Banish edition.
There you go. And you had the big spinning wheel in the front, and it had sort of the
not just a spinning wheel, but it had that little plastic piece, and it would make the noise. The click, I click, love click, that click, noise. Click, oh, click. My gosh, yes.
Yeah,
live. And it had numbers on it, and that's how many pieces you moved.
Yeah. That was game-making at its best. So we've had from the, it looks like from the 815, Payday and Bonkers. Does anybody remember Bonkers?
I remember Payday.
I know Bonkers. I've never played it. That was after my time. But
didn't receive the same reception as Mealborns. Everyone's like, oh, my good friend.
Yeah, what a great game.
Yeah, no. Bonkers was kind of that kid you sort of knew, and maybe you remember him. He had the green sweater on all the time. And here's one that when I saw this, and this is from the 630. This is a game we spent a ton of time on. What you love about a game, because Monopoly, as much as we all know it and love it, it was impractical, really, to play, because it would go on forever unless you... You know, unless my son Maxwell is the banker, he always bankrupts everybody immediately. But the
I'm on an investigation right now.
Yeah, we'll open up one of those. Is like Yahtzee was one of those great games too.
Great game.
Yeah.
You know, my first introduction to Yahtzee. I was working in Vegas at KDWN Radio, which at the time was in Union Plaza Hotel, number 1 Main Street, and the telephone operator's room, was right down the hallway from us. So we had a pass. The room, and as I would pass it, I'd start hearing this noise, this clink, 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 and then some kind of soft falling noise. And the operators between them had fashioned a box that was lined in carpeting, and they would play the game between them. So they were shaking the cubes, and then throw it into this carpet to keep it quiet while they're on the phone. And they'd play Yahtzee, and that was my first introduction to it.
I got a full house.
Yeah.
How did you know?
At a casino, it fits right in.
Yahtzee was one of those. It's one of those great games. It is so very simple.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody can play it.
And you can play it again and again and again.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just some of these games, like Monopoly is just one of those. It just takes a long time. I don't know if you ever even get to like a natural end of a Monopoly. And then once you're done, I don't know, you need to play it maybe a couple months later. At the most, right? Even if you're a big fan.
No, you're going to get right back at it and play again.
Okay. Mousetrap from the 773. Yeah. That was a good one. Tic-tac-toe.
Now, that's the one with the beanbags, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, right. It's kind of like Ginnip-Ginnop, right? Is it?
Yeah, kind of, yeah. Yeah.
Dino is a long
toss across.
Well, was that the same thing?
I thought that was the one.
Was there a game called Hands Down?
Yeah, that was the one Roger was talking about.
Yeah, the slap in the hands.
Slap in the hands. Okay,
yeah, right. Yeah. The
ripoff
of Hungry Hippo. We can't afford the 3D Hungry Hippo, so we're just going to get a flat hand.
Well, what we've got right now at 3:30 is the original genuine article when it comes to the news, and it is 3:30. Here's Roger Badish. You don't need to wait at the start. 720 WGN. It is Dane in Allstate Showcase Studio until 5 a.m. in for Matt Bubala. And on the line with us, we do have, you know, we mentioned, Dino, that we were going to have some in studio musical situation, you know, a working band member talking about the, you know, life on the road and performances and things like that. We are going to have that. He's not in studio, but he is on the phone right now. It's Ethan Bell of the Ethan Bell Band. Ethan, welcome to WGN.
Hey, thanks so much.
So you guys just got done playing. Talk a little bit about, I know it's an exhausting thing because you've got, you know, all of the gear and, you know, and for a working band, especially, you know, in and around the area, it takes a long time, right? Did you just get off the stage maybe at like midnight or something like that? One? Who knows?
Yeah, 1 o'clock. Yeah, we're in near Winnebago, Illinois, playing a place called Hot Rod Nellie's. And had a great show. You know, it's long, like you're saying, and you got late nights. But the playing the show and having a great time is making it all worth it.
Yeah. That's a great name for a club. Hot Rod Nelly's, I think, was one of the, it sounds like one of the places featured maybe in the Patrick Swayze hit Roadhouse. Dino, what do you think?
It could have been. Yeah. He threw out a lot of beatings in that movie.
So, Ethan, talk a little bit about the band. I know that you guys are out performing live. I know that you got some music. You've got an album and some CDs and stuff like that. Give a little overview to the band and the kind of music that people hear when they see the Ethan Bell Band.
Yeah, sure. We're a top 40 country band from Yorkville, Illinois. We currently are playing like the Quad State area, so we're a lot in northern Illinois. We get out to Wisconsin and Indiana and the Quad Cities, a little farther west into Iowa. And then over the last year, we've been playing in Nashville and kind of going back and forth from there. And we've been working on putting an EP together. We got two singles out right now. And life's going really, really good. So.
That is. That sounds great. Now, where are you based out of? Where's the band based out of right now? You said Yorkville, Illinois was where they were from? Where you're from?
Yeah, that's where I live. Johnny and Eric, our drummer and bassist, live in DeKalb, Illinois. And then Brandon lives in Plano. He's our guitar player. So
Yorkville is, I don't want to say in a word far, but it sounds far. But so you guys have to travel. You get get out there to some of these different clubs and you play stuff. And so what is the feedback? I know that country music is as popular now as it has ever been, maybe even more so. Do you to constantly kind of freshen up? Obviously, you've got some originals that you're doing with the EP, but you have to kind of freshen up stuff. And do you ever get music that you're fans of that you get to hear that you're like, oh, okay, it'll be great to kind of build that into the set, like new stuff coming up?
Oh yeah, man! Like I'm a big Walker Hayes fan. I love Sam Hunt, Luke Bryan, Lord Georgia Line. I don't get to see a lot of shows because we're always playing. You know, we've been a band for about 3 years. I haven't gone to a concert since I started playing in the band. So, but you know, I love all the new stuff in the format. You know, I feel like country music is, you said it yourself, it's as big as it's ever been. It's big enough now where there's like subgenres. You know, so you have like your kind of poppy top 40 stuff. You've got like you're more like classic sounding stuff, you know, like we got guys like Chris Stapleton that are kind of adding this like New Orleans blues kind of stuff, you know, but it's all under that country banner, you know, and you know, there's guys like Sam Hunt that are super urban. And so it's a cool genre to be a part of right now because there's just so much creativity and kind of, it's like a big melting pot. You know,
well, three years with the band. Of course, we're talking with Ethan Bell, the Ethan Bell Band. You know, when you have a band, you can name it after yourself. I think you're ahead of the game. That's definitely the way to go. And so you think about it as far as fans, you're getting fans that are fans of, certainly maybe you're playing some of their favorite country songs and music, but they're fans of the ways that you guys do it, you know? And so what do you see as the ultimate? Is there going to be a time where you're going to kind of want to, you know, branch out and do more just Ethan Bell music and just have you guys doing your own stuff? Are people calling for that? What's some of the feedback?
Yeah, you know, we've been getting really good feedback. So we're taking it in baby steps, you know what I mean? Like, we just put out our first song, Party Bus, back in July, and maybe it was June last summer. And it was just a fun song that we play at our shows that our fans like. And you know, we're just taking it real slow, putting out a song at a time, and crossing over into that. You know, like it's kind of a catch-22 because like in a lot of the clubs in the area, you know, you can play a lot of shows as a cover band and make really good money. And you know, if you're going to play a show, where you're playing all, you know, people like to use the word the original music, you know, the music you wrote or someone else wrote for you or whatever you want to call it. You're selling tickets, you know? And so you need to find a way to make a name for yourself, you know? And so we play like 3 or 4 times a week, playing lots of covers, and we've been able to get into kind of the areas we have because of that. And now we're starting to put out some of our own music, and we already have a good fan base in the areas that we're playing, and we're able to now give them that and also continue to play and consistently. So that's kind of my way of doing that, I guess. But you know, down the road, like we're just going to keep writing, and we're going to keep putting music out there, and you know, stuff people like, we'll play more. And the stuff that people don't like, we'll play less.
I don't want to say shrewd, but that sounds like a really smart way to go about it. The people, and we'll recap it for the listeners, is the things that people like, we're going to do more of. Things that maybe people don't like, we're going to cut down on that.
Absolutely right. That's a way to laser focus your music right there, Ethan.
Ethan, so before we let you go, I people want to know, and I know that that they're interested, like how it all starts. Obviously, I'm guessing you've been a music fan your entire life. What were some of those influences that made you say, like, hey, not only do I love music, but I want to do music, and then made you get into the whole kind of, you know, putting the band together thing? Who were the people you grew up on that you really appreciated?
As far as, like, who I listened to that I enjoyed listening to?
Yeah, your influences, yeah.
You know, it's so, I'm all over the board, man. Like, when I was younger, like, my parents, I listened to a lot of Christian music because my parents were in church, heavy in church a lot. And then my sisters, I grew up with 3 sisters. I was homeschooled. And so I just, you know, had kind of lived in this little bubble. And my older sister listened to like NSYNC and the Backstreet Boys a lot. So I kind of got into that and, you know, dug the harmonies and kind of the showiness of their performances and stuff like that. And then, when I was like 10, 11 years old, I started making some friends, you know.
Nice.
You know, homeschool kid. And,
not easy to do. You know, the homeschool thing, the friends would have been the sisters, right?
It's a whole other thing. But I was one of those, like, weird, awkward homeschool kids that nobody wanted to talk to because they're super weird. So, my neighbor, his dad played guitar, and the guy was like into Led Zeppelin and Black Sabbath and AC/DC, and you know, we would listen to Eminem a lot and stuff like that. And it wasn't until I was like 16, 17 that I started listening to country music, because I started playing out, doing acoustic stuff. And my buddy, Woody James, was kind of doing the same thing, and he introduced me to like Johnny Cash and Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, and like a lot of the Beatles stuff. I got into Beatles, you know, and then I started listening to like country radio and stuff that was out now. And I was like, man, this sounds like all the stuff I already listened to. This is great. You know? So,
you know, what is great to hear is that it is, you know, because a lot of times people just say, hey, you know what? Waylon Jennings, you know, that was it. You know, I heard that, you know, George Jones, boom, that was it. And I knew what I wanted to do. But what you have here is an eclectic blend. I think that's just kind of like a nice, like a stew with a lot of different ingredients. All those are great, you know, kind of musical legends, and they're all kind of built in to what it is that you're doing. And before we let you go, we want to definitely get information where people can like catch up, not only with the, you know, the appearances and all that, where they can online, of course, they can follow all your ventures with social media, because, you know, you maybe have grown up in a bubble with your 3 sisters, but now that bubble is expanding, and it was over Hot Rod Nelly's tonight. So we want to make sure people can get in there and see us. So Ethan, give the information how people can keep up with you and follow you and come see you live.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to be playing a show at the Sandwich Opera House. It's going to be a 310 person venue. It's a ticketed event, which, you know, we were talking about the idea of, like, you know, what's our whole process? You know, are we doing more of our own stuff? Are we doing more cover stuff? This is a good opportunity to come and hear our music and get exposed to the band in a kind of closed environment where you're going to get to see a show, and it's not going to be loud in a bar or be distracting, things like that. That's on March 24th. You can get tickets on sandwichopperhouse.org. Nice. Or you can hook up on our Facebook page, and there's links and stuff on there too. But if you're not in that area and you want to come see us somewhere else, you can get on our Facebook page. You go to ethanbellband.com. We're also on Instagram And we do weird things on Snapchat too. So
Ethan Bell, and the Ethan Bell Band is in his Bell is B-E-L-L, right? It's the traditional spelling.
Yeah.
All right, that sounds that sounds great. You know, in the sandwich, I think the Opera House, that is going to be an exciting, for those fans of yours that love seeing you and what you do in kind of that bar setting, a lot of fun. This is going to be a total different departure, I think, for you and the band.
Oh, yeah.
This is going to be a very cool experience.
It will be, yeah.
All right, well, get out there and enjoy it. Now, Ethan, you get home, you get some bed, because you need to get up and perform for the people coming up probably later on this weekend. And of course, coming up you know, later on in weeks in the March 24th at the Sandwich Opera House. So stay tuned for that. One more time with the website before we let you go.
Yeah, it's just EthanBellBand.com. EthanBellBand.com.
EthanBellBand.com. And Jess is going to play some of, we're going to use some of your music for the bumpers a little bit later on in the program as well. So appreciate that. And thanks for jumping on the air today.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me. It was great.
All right. Thanks, Ethan. Wow. See, that's cool. I wish, you know, sometimes, do you know, were you ever in a band?
No.
Even as like tambourine guy, maybe the jugs, the spoons,
play the xylophone.
Washboard.
No, I never played in a band.
Those, I gotta think. Oh my gosh, this is a great time, and so I want to wish him all the luck in the world and with what they're doing. It's exciting stuff. It's great to get out there. It's a double edged sword, right? Because you can make a lot of money playing Garth Brooks covers. Everybody wants that, but there's no future. You can't get your own.
You're not going to get
mojo
to your music
up.
That you want to play your, you know, that you've written yourself.
Yep.
And get your fans out to listen to. And cover bands are one thing, but it's always great when you're able to put your own music out there as well.
I think it's like a little bit of both, and then kind of ease into, and as people want more of what it is that you're doing individually, you're going to have that as well. So good luck to those guys. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to get more. We should have asked him what his favorite game was, but we'll get into more of your favorite games. 312-981-7200. You can add your thoughts in on your favorite board game of all time, and then we've got some great guests coming up as well. It's Dane and for Matt here on 720 WGN.
I don't want to hold you down. I just want to hold you now.
It's a little low. But you can get the gauge. This is like a soft and kind of sultry.
I like it. He's got a smooth voice.
It tugs at my heartstrings, Dino, in a way that I don't always hear. 720 WGN. It is Dane in the Allstate Showcase studio. And you are listening to Ethan Bell. I'm guessing he's one of the guys singing there, right? It's the Ethan Bell Band. And what he didn't mention is he mentioned, you know, I think the 24th at the Sandwich Opera House. You shouldn't miss that. A unique opportunity to see him and his band there in kind of a different setting, right? It's not every day that you see a band that plays in bars at an opera house. But also, when it comes to seeing bands that plays in bars, people appreciate that. He's got some things that are a little closer to home. I'm guessing, I haven't, like I said, Dino, you know, during the break, I don't have my globe out, but I'm guessing there's more people in the proximity of some of the other shows that are actually coming up before then. And so, Jess, what do we got? Is it the 19th, March 19th at Bub City? That's right over here on Clark Street. That's a great place to see a show.
Actually, yeah, he's doing quite a few shows in Chicago. So March 19th, like you mentioned, he's doing Bub City. So I'm actually probably going to go check that one out if I'm not here.
Yeah.
And then later on in the month, he's playing over at Firewater. Not really familiar with that location, but it's in Chicago. And then on the 31st, he's playing at Old Crow in Wrigleyville.
These are okay.
All good venues to go out and get see him.
Well, yeah, that's awesome.
I think he mentions him. He's in like the Quad City area. You know, and he's out there
all
in Yorkville,
Iowa,
and far away. But some of these places are pretty close to the city. So if you enjoy that music, and you want to see Ethan, you can see him live and in person close to the city. And of course, we'll have that up. I think at WGNRadio.com. We'll have some of the information about that as well. So we didn't get a chance to ask him about his game, his favorite game. I'm guessing as a homeschooler, we've got Parcheesia. Trivial Pursuit is one.
Yeah,
that was one of the most popular games of all time, and it's one of the ones kind of like Monopoly that has sort of adapted to be kind of more things to more people, because you know Monopoly has. We've got like four or five different. We've got a state parks Monopoly. We've got a Cubs Wrigley Field Monopoly.
Yeah, I got
a
Peanuts Monopoly.
You got a Peanuts Monopoly? Yeah, some of these are more valuable than others. We've got a Star Wars one. You know, and I think I can't remember who had mentioned that they have. Of course, it was Blake who had like the first game, his favorite game of all time. He has a mint condition, unused one that's in still the original packaging. Well, and where I'm going with that is on the Monopoly side. Some of these collector's editions are very, very valuable. So if you have like an original Simpson Monopoly, they're worth maybe $80, a couple hundred bucks. I mean, it's not just your normal, you know, $20 kind of games. Of course, with our kids, we got them. I think it was off Craigslist. So they were new at the time, and the kids immediately destroyed them and made them completely useless.
Which game was that?
These are Monopoly. Some of these they have like a state park Monopoly
and the Simpsons
Monopoly. They didn't destroy the Simpson one. I didn't buy that one.
Oh.
But we did get the Star Wars one, and they lost all the pieces right away. So
C-3PO is no longer with us.
Yeah, he's down to a C-1PO. So, Dino, I know after, well, let's talk a little bit about it now when it comes to games. Some of, you know, not every game, Monopoly, even as popular as it's been, has not reached the level of American pastime, right? Whereas baseball has, and this Cubs team, I haven't got a chance to pay total attention to spring training, but from the outside looking in, this is a pretty strong team.
Yeah, they're pretty well set at most of their positions right now. It's just a matter of making a couple of decisions, one of them being the leadoff hitter. And who's playing center field, and most of the other positions are pretty much set in stone. I mean, you go around the infield; it's, you know, you got Rizzo at first, and then, you know, Baez at second, Russell short, Brian at third. I mean, it's the same, you know, foursome you've seen the last.
That is not broke. You do not need to fix that.
No, there's no need to make any changes. They'll bring Ben Zobrist in off the bench. He's not going to. He'll be a spot starter now this year, as opposed to in the past when they tried to get him into, you know, as the everyday second baseman.
He's going
to be more
that?
Of a utility guy now. He's going to go back to that role, I believe.
And yeah.
You're going to see him in the outfield corners. You're going to see him at second. You may even see him at first. You never know. I mean, but you know, the outfield right now, Schwarber's going to be in left field, getting a lot of at bats against right-handed pitchers. You know, against tough lefties, you may see him sit down, and that'll be a spot for Zobrist to play. They'll have Hayward and Wright, and then they'll platoon with Ian Happ and Almora in center field. Almora just needs at bats. I was kind of hoping Joe would give him more at bats against right-handers, but right now it looks like those are all going to Happ because he's a switch hitter. And Happ's off to a great start. I mean, he's hit three home runs already in spring training, and. Oh. You know, and so he's off to a good start, and it might be a spot that won't, be too difficult for them to fill if he keeps hitting the way he's hitting. And the pitching staff, of course, they're limiting Brandon Morrow's activity. He's only going to pitch in 5 games, that was what I was reading, in spring training, because he had a long, extended postseason
gotcha.
With the Dodgers last year. Now, Darvish was supposed to start yesterday, or I believe on Thursday. Oh, yeah, it was yesterday. And they just scratched him because he had an illness. He's going to pitch again early next week. So, and they've gone through the rotation, you know, and they haven't pitched a lot of innings yet. We're still in the first week or so of going into the second full week of spring training, really. And so there's still some work to be done with the starters. But I think Joe Maddon just, you know, he's pretty well got it where he wants it. He's got everybody in the positions. And now it's just bringing them along slowly and then fine-tuning them for the regular season.
Yeah, you think, and what's great about this is, and this is the intangible, and this is the thing that you can't necessarily do. It's not easy to do, is to be, you want to be a player's manager, you want to support your players, but you still have to manage, and you have to be able to, you know, do what it is that you think is best without kind of building in whatever their motivations may be. And what's great is that when he came in, he came into a team that, although it showed some promise, had not really done anything yet.
Right.
And he was able to say, like, things are going to be new. They're going to be different. You're going to dress up like Disney characters. Who knows? You know, jumpsuits and pajamas with onesies, whatever you're going to do. So he built in a little bit of the culture of fun, but also built in some really unusual things that when you get players, especially now, and we've seen it all happen right before our very eyes, Dino, as you saw these players go from young players with potential to now really the superstars of the game. And so they've all been kind of just grown up in this system of go wherever Joe says, do whatever. Because you look at a Ben Zobrist who was, you know, kind of like a superstar, right? He had just won back, you know, won World Series with the Royals, and was one of those free agents. He had a history with Joe Madden, but he came in, I think, expecting to play like second base, right, or something. He wanted to be that guy. And then you look at a guy like Chris Bryant, who, you know, Joe is able to get them to agree to either not play that day or to play all over the field. And I don't know that you could go, I don't know that you could take the pieces as they are now constituted and build that from scratch. I think they had to kind of grow up in it.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. I think too that, you know, when you win, though, you know, those putting in people in different places not magnified as much. You know, if you're losing and you're, you know, toying around with the lineup, then all of a sudden, you know, there's a second guessers out there like, well, why is he doing that? Well, Madden's had a track record all the way through his career of having platoon players like Zobrist. He had him when he was in Tampa.
Mm-hmm.
You know, able to fill in, and it gives him the flexibility in game to game, as well as during the entire season, because, you know, when you're on the bench and you're waiting to get in there, it's, you know, when he's got guys that can play multiple positions, he can just kind of move pieces around like a chess game. Just put in a guy here, put in a guy there, change the order up, you know, get guys in different positions. So it's difficult then for other teams just to come in and say, yeah, this is the lineup we're going to get every day. Well,
yeah,
you're not going to get it like that every day.
Yeah, wait, and there's a thought process to that. Also, too, you're looking at Kyle Schwarber is, you know, hopefully he's a dedicated guy, and I know that he's kind of built into his fitness a little bit, and maybe I'm sure if there's a way to practice being a better outfielder, he's busy doing that as well. When we come back from this news, we're going to go into the thing that has been kind of, I think, I don't want to say the Achilles heel, but it has been the thing, maybe the weak part of Joe Madden's game, which has been kind of managing the pitching. We've had a lot of great pitchers, and sometimes right. It works out, and sometimes it's like, geez, you know, we have to figure out a different plan. We'll talk about that after the news. Right now, though, it is straight up 4 o'clock, and this is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. If you're an Amazon Echo user, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. It is news time, and here's Roger Badish. All right, thank you to Jess Rains. A little Footloose there. Right, that's a great one. 720 WGN, it is Dane here in the Allstate Showcase studio on Michigan Avenue. Look, Kenny Loggins. You know what? We got a chance to interview Kenny Loggins, so sitting in for Bill Leff with Wendy Snyder once. Kenny Loggins called in. Always exciting to talk to him. I mean, this is a guy, you know, he's all right. And, you know, from your favorite movie, Caddyshack, right? A big part of that.
Exactly right.
Yep. And Dino, that was the voice of Dino Tiberi, who is also the voice of Harry Carey, who is also the voice of Reason when it comes to the Cubs pitching. We'll talk about that in a second. Kenny Loggins, though, we did the interview, and he was in the bathroom the entire time. It sounded like, right? Not only did it, well, it couldn't have possibly been, because that would have been, yeah. He's like, so there was this weird echo, and then there was like running water. But then again, when you're Kenny Loggins, you imagine he's probably, you know, has like a waterfall in his house or something. He insisted on doing the interview next to it, I guess, because it, but there it was. It was so prominent that we had to address it. Kenny, are you in the bathroom? And then I don't know what he said, because he's a clever guy, right? You've been out there. It was something, you know, you got to go, or something. I don't know what he said.
He was all right. There's no question about that.
Well, he was after that. Once we heard the flush, we knew that. So here's the thing. Joe Madden, with all that success, and you can question him, right? We're all family here. You can question him. You have to recognize that sometimes it works out okay. Like with Chapman, it worked out okay. You could put him in for like 4 innings.
Until his arm falls off, Dan.
Right, until his arm fell off. Well, even when it was falling off, he was still throwing about 98. But when you got to like a Wade Davis, you realize that that's just not how even an elite closer is built. But he still tried to go ahead and do it. And we were pulling out pitchers that we could have left in. I don't know. I think they were just gassed. You know, that Washington series, I think, was... That was our World Series, at least from like the stamina point, the pitching point. There's been some talk that, you know, the Arrieta could end up on. I mean, if you want to like up the ante, you know, you've extracted, you know, a Dusty Baker, and you've added, you know, a Jake Arrieta. Like, they could be the team to beat.
Well, if they add Arrieta to that rotation that they already have, that's a formidable group.
You got the guy with the two eyes.
Well, and you thought that your rotation was pretty darn good when you picked up you Danish. But now, if Arietta goes to the National, that's going to change the dynamic. They already have plenty of talent on the offensive side, and Dusty Baker's no longer there.
Right.
Davey Martinez now running the show. And Davey may have won up Joe Madden the other day when he had camels in training camp. That's one thing Joe Madden is not... has not had yet, and Joe is a little jealous.
Joe's never gone circus animal?
Never, no, he's never gone
camel.
Camel. Maybe llama, I'm not sure.
Alpaca.
Yeah, maybe that way, but I don't think he's ever done the camel thing.
Wow. That is going to, because you look at, once you extract a Dusty Baker from the equation, and I think it really takes the table off the table of strange and unfortunate occurrences that typically follow him into important games.
And probably a playoff series win this year. So, just the big changes in Washington. And Arietta, it looks like that's a landing spot for him if nowhere else. He's just not getting the offer thought he was going to get.
Here's what the Cubs could do. And I know they don't need any more pitchers, whatever. But I think almost maybe as a kind of preemptive strike to keep him from from the other, you know, maybe you get Arietta and you bite the bullet on what is becoming, just based on no one else offering him anything, you know, a more and more affordable contract.
Well, if you could get him for a year or two, that'd probably be the way to do it. But
he's not going to do that.
And the Cubs are going to be up against the luxury tax if they continue to spend money, because
Dino.
I know you say that it's unlimited, but you know what? I beg to differ. I think the Rickett family, I don't think they're going to be big fans of paying money they don't really need to pay.
Well, I like the way that you dovetailed in the luxury tax, and Bob, whose favorite game is Monopoly, would appreciate the fact that you built that in. I think that is in the Monopoly game. Isn't there like a card
there
in the
luxury tax chest, right?
Or something?
$75, I think it is.
Yes, indeed.
The man with the funny hat and the whole bit, you know.
So what do you see happening on the pitching side as you get into those situations? Because, you know, here's the thing. You know,
he's got to have confidence in his bullpen, and that's the problem he had the last 2 years. He had certain guys he trusted, and the rest of them he didn't trust at all. And in a lot of cases, they didn't give him a reason to be trusted when it was in a pressure situation. Now, will Pedro Strop, will he be an effective reliever? Will C.J. Edwards get his issues straightened out? We don't know.
I feel jittery because those are propositions that have, it depends. It's the kind of thing, if everything's going great, they could be absolutely great. But if things are on the line, you hate to really depend on those. And nothing against those guys.
Well, here's the other thing we need to consider, Dane. New pitching coach, Chris Bosio, now out.
Yeah.
And Jim Hickey in, who's worked with Madden before in Tampa. And, from all accounts, he's been a pretty solid pitching coach. Some of these guys just might need a different voice. They might need a different, different set of eyes watching what they're doing, some different approaches. And I guess we'll find out soon enough once these guys start pitching. But, right now, he's got to build that trust back with the bullpen to be able for them to be successful, because let's face it, starting pitching right now, if you get six innings out of them, that's a pretty good start for most.
You talk about window of opportunity, and you know the Cubs, we've talked about it, have had, a few years as far as where you've got these guys, this core, everyone's kind of healthy. You've got the embarrassment of kind of position player riches, and you've got this opportunity. But just as it was like the Cubs' year and you felt it going in, with the Dodgers, like they were good. You look at, we've just talked about Washington. These teams are going to be coming, and they are going to be as hungry as possible. And I think it's going to be harder and harder to close them out as you go there to try to, get another World Series.
And those are the teams just in your own league. Now you still have the Astros, who are a young team, and their rotation is pretty solid. So they're not going anywhere anytime soon. And now the Yankees, of course, they've bulked up again. They've gotten Stanton in the lineup now with Judge.
Ugh.
That's a lot of power, and they already had a lot of power before he got there.
Yep.
And their pitching's been, one of their question marks as well, but I think they've addressed some things in the offseason. Garrett Cole going to Houston's going to solidify their rotation. So it's not just the National League. If they were fortunate enough to get through, they're still going to have to deal with the other side.
Yeah,
so,
you're not even taking into consideration, the Cardinals and that rivalry.
Right, and the Brewers improved themselves by getting Lorenzo Cain and picking up Christian Yelich from Florida. So, Or Miami. I mean, they've made some good moves. They just need a starting pitcher. Maybe Arrieta lands there.
Yeah, and anything can happen. It's going to be exciting to watch. One thing I think we can figure, it's not going to get any easier. So we're going to take a break. When we come, what's easy, though, Dino, is to find a cool car that you would absolutely love at World of Wheels. I know you said you'd never been there, but if you ever needed a reason, Dale Earnhardt Jr. is going to be there. Also, some of the stars from WWE are going to be there as well.
All right.
Including also one of your childhood idols, I know it was mine, is Bo Duke from the Dukes of Hazzard. If you can find an opportunity with
listen, that right there is worth the price of admission. I got to get up to the World of Wheel and find out what it's all about.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to have Larry Way. He is the executive director, the PR maven for World of Wheel. So stay tuned. It's staying in for Matt here on 720 WGN.
This is Larry Way from the 56th Annual O'Reilly Auto Parts World of Wheels. And you're on the road with Dane on WGN.
It was a beautiful day. Sun beat down, I had the radio on, I was driving.
720 WGN on the road with Dane, live here in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. And, you know, there's so many great events in Chicago, so many great car shows, cruise nights, all sorts of things for car lovers, motorsports enthusiasts. There is no event that they look forward to that is more anticipated, I don't think, than World of Wheels. And this year may be the most anticipated of all. So over 56 years, this may be the biggest one yet. It is the O'Reilly Auto Parts World of Wheels presented by South Oak Dodge, Chrysler, and Jeep. And the guy with his hand on the pulse of so much that is happening coming up March 9th through the 11th is the one and only Larry Wade. Larry, welcome to WGN.
Thank you. Glad to be back.
Yeah, well, it's great to have you. You are our guide to all that great fun. It is, you know, 500 cars, some of the biggest names in motorsports, and one of the biggest events in the country, and it comes to Chicago March 9th.
We're conservative when we say 500. It's more like 700 or 800.
I was going to say I've been to car shows and cruise nights where they say it's like 500, 600. World of Wheels is bigger, you know.
Oh, it's huge! It's huge. The Stevens Convention Center is huge. We rented all the halls, and we're open Friday 3 to 10, Saturday 10 to 10, and Sunday 10 to 6. Then on Saturday from noon to 10, we have a tuner galleria on the second floor, and what that is. It's imports, domestic and European, high-performance domestics, and it's the younger crowd. And we also sell commercial space up there, and that's one day only. They move in Friday night, and there's loud music. I mean, it's just fantastic. There's another 150 cars up there, and it's a really great draw for us, which is tuned to our younger car audience.
And it's not just an exhibition too, Larry, and that's one thing. Of course, you've got those vendors, you've got people out there that are doing restorations or have, you know, different car supplies and ways to make your car even cooler and better. All that is there, so there's a bunch of that. Plus, you've got some amazing show cars. You've got some of the best cars out there. They make a point to make it to World of Wheels, including, you know, some people that we know that just, they work on these cars all the time. You had it on the calendar forever, and they'll be out there too. So talk about the ability of some of these cars are just going to be, you know, great people from around Chicagoland that are bringing them out.
Well, there's a couple of things, yes. And 90% of any of our shows are within about a 75-mile radius of the event, like a 75-mile radius of Chicago. And that's most of our floor. Now, we also have people that tour cars professionally. Like, they could be in and this is a judged competition. So they're broken down into custom trucks, competition cars, hot rods, etc. But there's these people that have got elaborate displays, and they tour from one city to another to win points to qualify for the championship. And all those championship cars, the shootout will be next weekend at the event. So the top 30 show cars from across the United States and Canada will be there to compete to be the international champion. Now, they'll compete to be the best hot rod, best truck, whatever their category is, but then there's one overall champion. So they're all trying to get that. I mean, this is millions and millions and millions of dollars of cars.
Yeah.
That just one little section, never mind the other millions and millions of all the great cars from the Chicagoland area. And we also have this year, from the latest Fast and Furious movie, from Fate of the Furious 8, we have 5 of the cars from the movie. Now, these are not promo cars. They were actual cars that were used in the movie.
Wow.
Kids love that. I mean, that's a great draw for us. I mean, and whoever thought that Fast and Furious franchise would take off like this? This is the 8th movie. They're shooting the 9th right now. They say they're going to go to 10. it's a great thing to have those cars. So we have a heck of a cross section. We have a lot of really, I mean, never mind all the other stuff we've got. The car show itself, you could spend an entire day just looking at the cars.
It is for those people out there, and of course, if they listen to this program or listen to the stuff that we do here, they understand. You know, we wouldn't steer them in the wrong direction, but most everybody is kind of initiated into the World of Wheels phenomenon. They know what it is, and it's almost too much, Larry. It's almost too much good stuff. Too many great cars. You're sitting there, you feel like you need to take a picture of each and every one of them. There's so many moments where, like, I'll grab people I'm with or my wife or the kids. They'll be like, "Oh my gosh, look at that." And you've got it. And they can be from anywhere. It's so cool that you're building in some of the stars of the movies too, to kind of build that. And Fast and Furious, I remember it. You said who would have thought it would have been so popular? I remember back when it first came out, a friend of mine was doing the PR for the first movie, and he's like, "Dane, do you want to come to the premiere of this?" You know, Vin Diesel. But Vin Diesel was completely unknown. No one knew who he was. And I was like, it's kind of a late day, you know, I don't really have time to do that. If I would have known, it is one of those things where I kind of scold my former self to be a part of, you know, one of those first moments in it. And you guys have some of the biggest stars of the latest film. That is great. Now, here's the thing, and you always have great stars, race car drivers. I know last year we had John Force out there. I mean, it's there's always Mark Martin. You know, you guys always have so many stars of the racing world out there. But this year, and people that are listening, this is one of the few opportunities that you're going to have, especially in the Chicagoland area, he just doesn't get here much, is to see Dale Earnhardt Jr. fresh off his career.
Now, to get Dale Earnhardt Jr. booked, I mean, this was a feat just to get him to agree to do two shows with us, because he is so busy and so popular.
How did you do it? And bless you, Larry, for making those shows, at least one of those shows, be the Chicago area show. You'll have so many people thanking you, fans of Larry Way.
But
how did you do it?
Pete Tundis, who owns our company, is comes from a marketing background, a public relations background, and he's my closest friend. We talk every day, and he says, "I'm working on Dale Earnhardt Jr." I said, "You've got to be kidding me!"
Right?
And we jumped through hoops to get these people. Now we also have and Dale will be there from noon to two on Saturday. We also have Dean Ambrose, who's a very popular WWE wrestler. He'll be there Friday night.
Yep.
We have John Schneider, who played Bo Duke from the Dukes of Hazzard on Sunday. But in order to get these people, they don't just sign up. You don't just call them and say, "Can you come to our car show?" I mean, you work hard to get these people.
I'm sure, Larry, you have to give them some free tickets, right? You have to give them.
You jump through hoops. And WWE, we're the only production company, car show production company, that WWE will give top people to. Now, they'll give what we maybe call second string or so on. We get all the top wrestlers. We have such a great relationship with WWE, and we're so fortunate to be able to bring these top wrestlers to all our shows. And Dean Ambrose is super popular, but to get Dale Jr. was just a huge... I don't know what we're going to do. I mean, the doors open at 10. I'm sure at 10:30 there's going to be 300-400 people in line. They're just... They don't... They'll look at the car show later. They're just going to run to that stage.
I don't... Yeah, it's going to be crazy. I'm excited. I know a lot of people are excited for it as well. But it is a testament, too. You bring in some of the wrestlers, some of the, you know, stars of sports and TV and all that stuff. You know, our kids loved it. Last year you had Sky Jackson, right? You know, and it just shows, I think, the common fandom that you have for car enthusiasts. Our kids love that. You know, she's from Jesse, from, I don't know if it's
from,
like,
Bunked, yeah.
Yeah, and from Bunked Rec with the Kiki Waka and stuff. They were so super excited to meet her. So when it comes to the kids, you know there's going to be a lot of things for them to look at and do. And what kind of activations do you have family-wise?
We have a little bit of everything. Disney has not put out a show in 3 years, and we've used all the popular Disney. I mean, they're still in reruns. All the shows are in reruns, but we're patiently waiting for them to hit with another movie, because that's great for us. We don't have any Disney stars this year. We have a pedal car challenge, which is sponsored by Summit Racing. What they do, I think there's like 20 schools involved in this. Summit gives these pedal cars that they sell to schools, and then the schools modify them, and then the school will bring them to be a display, and they'll have all these pedal cars. And they're unrecognizable from what they were. And then they're judged. We have a professional judging staff that judge them. We have a pinstripers auction where these guys stripe panels, and they do just about anything. And that's all for Children's Hospital, Ronald McDonald House. I mean, we do that. But the kids walk around at the cars, the displays, and the families just walk around and see all this stuff, and they just say, "Wow, it really is a cool thing." And yeah, Dale Jr., no doubt about it. But the wrestling, I mean, that's a lot of the wrestling fans are kids, are young people. And
yeah.
then
oh, yeah.
and John Schneider, the Dukes of Hazzard, are 40 years old. He's going to be swarmed with people.
Larry.
It's all generations, because grandfathers, mums and dads and grandfathers and kids watch the reruns, or they watch, they have these DVDs or whatever. I mean, the demographic for John Schneider is just unbelievable. And John is just as nice, as kind of guy as can be. And I've worked with him, I've known him since the 80s, since the show was on. I've known him a very long time. I have a very good relationship with him. He's a great guy. So, no, we've got a terrific show. And these Fast and Furious cars are going to do great.
Oh, you have hit on everything. You've got a little something for everybody and a lot for the entire family, and certainly more than any car enthusiast could hope to have. And you think about it, right? To have Bo Duke there, I mean, I was one of those kids that, you know, I think it was on Friday nights. I was sitting in front of the television. This was before DVRs, you know, waiting for Dukes of Hazzard to start.
Yeah, yeah.
It was as big. I don't think they can make television shows as big a hits now, because there are so many channels, you know, with so many different options.
Right.
Back then it was as big as it gets. So yeah, you were going to have some crowds on your hands, and excited to have, and super thankful you've got a couple pairs of tickets for our listeners here at WGN Radio and On the Road. So we're going to give those away as well. So a couple listeners will be in attendance as well. But before we let you go, give the website where people can get in there, kind of plan their day and get some tickets.
Go to worldofwheels.com, and it's got all the times for our celebrities, all the times for everything. And I would invite people to go to their local O'Reilly Auto Parts store, and they can get discount tickets. And if you're a family of four, you can save a lot of money just by stopping by O'Reilly.
It is a great thing to do in Donnelly Stevens Center. Lots of parking there. It is in the suburbs. You don't have to go all the way into the city. You can get it centrally located. A great place to have an event, and it is an amazing event coming up. So, Larry, thanks so much for what you're doing, building all this, or at least being a big part of it, and thanks for being on WGN today.
Thank you for having us. We appreciate it. Thank you so much.
720 WGN live here in the Allstate Showcase studio until 5 a.m. And great to have Larry Way on from World of Wheels. He mentioned it. We're going to have a pair of tickets that we'll give away. We'll think about how we're going to give them away after the news. When we come back from the news, too, we're going to have NHRA legend Ron Capps is going to be talking about coming back to Route 66 for the 20th anniversary of that great drag strip. And also, we're going to talk a little bit of music and some other things. We're going to hit him with a bunch of different things. You know, based on, because we had Ethan Bell on. Dino, you know this. And so we're going to tap into the musical side of even some drag racers and some other people as well. Plus, Dino, give some thought. Maybe it's your favorite game or something for those two tickets for World of Wheels. I know you want to go. You can't win, but you can think of the
Darn
way.
It.
Yeah, other people can. Well, no one else in this whole room can win. So, yeah, it's a pity party.
Yeah, that's no good. I really wish I could have gone to the World of Wheel on the house, but sounds like I'll have to pay like everyone else.
Oh, you'll have to be like a roadie for maybe a John Schneider, Bo Duke. Just get in there and be one of his handlers.
Oh, listen, where's General Lee? I want to drive him around the block.
General, we're going to talk about that as well, so stay tuned. Right now, though, it is 4:30 and news time. Here's Roger Badish.
Hey, this is Ron Capps, driver of the Napa Auto Parts Nitro Funny Car, and you're on the road with Dane on WGN.
WGN on the road with Dane, live here in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue, and honored to have on the line with the driver of the iconic Napa Funny Car for Don Schumacher Racing, a world champion in the sport, second all time in NHRA Funny Car wins, one of the true greats, the honorable and amazing Ron Capps. Welcome to WGN.
Man, Dane, I'm going to have you introduce me to every room I walk in. That was probably the best. That was by far the best introduction I've ever had.
Are you serious? Well, wait till you...
Honorable and iconic. Oh, my gosh.
And hey, you know what? If you look back, I think you've got to start reviewing a little bit of your stats and go through your own bio, because, you know, you have been doing this for a long time. It has been obviously a love and a passion, one of the greats, and you've, you know, done it at the very highest level and all that. And as NHRA is looking to get out there, be more things to more people, get more fans, I've always said it. I've said it to the listeners, and I know we've brought a bunch of people to the tracks and to the sport, is that it's one of those sports that if you can see it in person live, there is nothing like it. And typically you will get hooked, and it just doesn't translate as well to TV. Looking, you know, we all know, of course, you know, your mom was pregnant with you at the track, so you had kind of a jump start on things. But talk a little bit about that, you know, as you try to not only do what you do on the track, but also get new fans and kind of engage people as that ambassador to sport to bring in new NHRA fans.
Yeah, no, it's, you're right. The sport is, it's like going to a Blackhawks game and never, but only watching on TV and getting there for the first time. There's something about the sport that once you've been there and you felt the vibration, you know, these cars are over 11,000 horsepower, fire breathing, you know, 0 to 330 miles an hour right in front of your eyes, kind of a feeling when you're there at the track. Once you see one live and then you watch it on TV, it changes your perception of everything. So it is, it's a great sport. I grew up on it. Like you said, I was conceived, I think, in the parking lot of a racetrack in California. So my mom and dad thankfully brought me into the sport growing up, and it's just been a lot of fun to, you know, I couldn't think of a better sport to make a living at, that's for sure. And I don't have a big company my parents own or anything to fall back on. If my whole adult life has been drag racing, and I've been lucky enough to be surrounded with great, great owners, Don Prudhomme and now Don Schumacher, who hails from Chicago.
Yep.
And two legendary owners at that, and then of course 10 years going on with Napa Auto Parts as a sponsor. And you don't hear too often of somebody, that association, like Richard Petty and the STP, and you know, just these Jimmy Johnson and Lowe's, that sort of thing in motorsports is hard to come by now, where you have that length of sponsorship. We always looked at Kenny Bernstein and Budweiser, you know, it was right. That length of that sponsorship kind of made you want to try to achieve something like that in life.
Well, Ron, okay, so a little bit humble, you're like, hey, maybe you shouldn't be introduced a certain way, but you should, because those iconic brands that really, you know, are kind of the physical embodiment of motors and motorsports and the industry and all that, those relationships, that's a testament to the success that you have had on the track, you know, and it's that kind of thing, I think, that is important. Do you feel any extra pressure, or is it just something that you're comfortable, you wear it well, it's the way that you've done things? But yeah, I mean, Napa, that's huge, and to have it for that extended period of time is really great.
Yeah, you know, and I used to get up on the soapbox and just try to get these people to come out to our races, and I've always been a huge rock and roll fan, and so music has kind of always driven me, and so to be able to get to be friends with some of my heroes growing up, the James Hetfield now, Metallica is a good friend, these other athletes that I have always looked up to and watched, and now to have them come out to a race, it blows my mind, because I can take them sort of backstage at the racetrack and show them something that completely blows them away, much like going to watch them play. And so I've always had to feel like I was on a soapbox bragging about our sport, and then all of a sudden our sport this last, especially 3 or 4 years, has just blown up. So now I'm getting these phone calls of people asking to come out, and that's a great feeling after all these years.
See, that is so, I mean, and you have said it too. You may not be able to be there selling tickets and doing sponsorships and coming out and kind of, you know, getting the stands together and kind of raising the crowd size and all that in maybe the traditional way, but by sharing it with people who do have that platform to reach masses of fans that you know that they like the same kind of things that you will, I think that would be great. My summer job growing up was I worked, you know, backstage at Alpine Valley, which is right here, and it's over the border in Wisconsin, one of the largest outdoor music theaters, and Metallica, you know, I was at the Metallica tour, you know, where they opened up for Ozzy Osbourne. The original bassist was still playing at the time. And so think about this, and this is weird that you make that connection, because you think about it. So let's say Formula One, maybe it's like classical music, right? Maybe NASCAR is sort of country rock, maybe rock and roll a little bit. There is no sport in the world of auto racing that closely identifies with heavy metal, right, than drag racing and NHRA. Is it the kind of thing when you bring some of your friends to the track that they are as blown away by what you do as you are by them?
Yeah, absolutely. Every race, even we started the year out in Pomona just a few weeks ago, and it's Los Angeles, and every actor in the world lives there, and a lot of the rock stars. And so that, it's funny, you go to a concert, and I went to see Ozzy Osbourne and Black Sabbath 2 years ago. I took some of my crew guys in L.A. right before we started the season out in Pomona. And I looked around, and I probably saw a dozen drag race shirts. Some people wearing my shirts at the, and had no idea that I was standing behind them at a rock concert. And then you go to any NHRA race, and you look around, and there's Foo Fighters shirts or Metallica. And it's just, it's got that same sort of vibe where it just, you're there to witness something that you've never, you know, I tell people all the time, if you haven't been, the assault on your senses is much like going to a Metallica or anything. I mean, if your favorite rock music or even country, whatever it may be, the noise, the smell, the feeling, the smile you get when you feel a race car go by on a drag strip, especially, you know, Top Fuel or a funny car, it is nothing but a smile on your face. And so, yeah, it's the same thing for me to be able to associate that, not only just as sort of that same feeling you get when you're, you know, here's the thing, drag racing for me is like a backstage show every time, because I tell people, you can't go to NASCAR, and I'm not ripping NASCAR or IndyCar or Formula One. You can't go to one of those races and go hang out and be within an arm's reach of your favorite player, your favorite member of the band, your favorite driver. You just don't get to see them that close. You go to a drag race, and every single ticket you buy, no matter reserve seat or whatever, is a pit pass comes with it. So you watch this car on the track, and you watch whoever your favorite is. Then you go down the pit area afterwards, and if it's John Forrest or Tony Schumacher or myself, you come up and get a picture, bring your kids up and pose and talk and ask questions, whatever it may be. And it blows people's minds that have never been to a sporting event and sort of seen that. So they're sort of getting it now. And it's funny because I always say it's like a backstage pass. Yeah. It's like going to see Metallica, watching the show, and then going backstage in between songs and rapping with James Hetfield and Kirk and Lars. And then they go, all right, we're going to go back out on stage. And you run back out in front row, and you watch them again. That's what a drag race is all about. It's that sort of intimate setting. And we still get tracks where I'm walking through the pits, and I'll just hear somebody out of earshot, like an old lady that's maybe first time at a race, and you hear her say, oh, my God, there's the driver right there. And so they don't get it at first. They think it's like a Bears game or a Blackhawks. You don't get to hang out with these players that close. You know, like you do at a drag race.
You know, it's important that you mention that. And, of course, let the listeners know we're talking with Ron Capps, legendary driver of the iconic Napa Funny Car for Don Schumacher Racing. But it is so important, right, because it is one of those totally immersive events. You get there, and when you talk about the band connections, you know, it's like, you know, there's an encore every 5 minutes, right? Because it isn't like you're waiting around 4 hours to have somebody and see if somebody wins. And nothing against all of the great motorsports. We love them all. But NHRA delivers, and it delivers, like, on a consistent basis multiple times a day, and it is great. When you talk about the ambassador side of it, and you definitely are doing that as one of the faces of the sport, and you travel around the country, and you think San Diego, you know, that's the kind of place where if you're lucky enough to grow up there, you never leave, and if you find it throughout some time in your life, you get there, and then you don't leave. But you travel the country, and you get to see so many great tracks and cities and fan bases and all that kind of stuff, and people want to know, what are some of your favorites? You know, what are some of your favorite places to go for whatever reason, whether it's the town, whether it's the music scene, whether it's the track itself or the people?
Gosh, it's a great question. I get that question probably more than any, and I can't pinpoint one. Every time I'm asked, I say, do you mean track, like track surface, or do you mean the area? Just like you posed the question, and it's funny because I have one for every category just about. Like, you know, I'll always get on Polestar or another website before I fly to a race a couple weeks out, and I'll look and see what bands are playing. And then if I know somebody with that band or with the tour manager or something, I always try to work in a day early of coming in and going to see a show, even if it's a good band at a small club, which I actually prefer. Chicago is always the best for that because there's so many good clubs. But you look at tracks like Brainerd, Minnesota, that has the what we call the zoo, which is Mardi Gras on steroids, and it's hundreds of thousands of people camping right next to the racetrack, and some of them don't even make it over to the racetrack. But at night, we all get together as a team, and all the teams do this, and you go into the zoo, and it's a campground that's insane, and it's so much fun, and you can't even believe what's going on in there sometimes. And it's sort of like Vegas. What happens in the zoo stays in the zoo a lot of times, but that's sort of the thing that comes along with that racetrack. And I'm not that track's necessarily any better as far as with the race car, but it's just a fun place to go. So there's, you know, Sonoma's a great one in July. It's just the weather and the wine tasting for the wives and family to come hang out. So it's all got its perks and the things that we love. It's hard to say because California is my favorite, and I grew up here, so I'd have to say Pomona or Sonoma is probably my absolute favorite.
Yeah, well, you think about it, and this is another part of it that doesn't translate to TV. I mean, they've got their job to do. They've got to call all the races, do a little bit of the background stuff on some of the drivers and the season and all that stuff, and they can't spend a ton of time hanging out in the zoo, you know, and so this is the kind of thing, and another reason to get out there wherever you're hearing this from, your local track, get out there and experience the racing live. You mentioned, you know, the tradition and the legends and Don Prudhomme and Big Daddy Don Garlitz, and a lot of those guys are going to be at Route 66. They've spent time there, of course, over their careers, but they'll be there this year. This is, can you believe it? It's hard to believe, because I remember being, I think, at the groundbreaking for it, and when they built that entire complex there. It's 20 years at Route 66, so if you could share a memory or two or any thoughts on that facility as we close in on 20.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I remember the very first time showing up there. That track still, is one of the, what we call the super tracks. I mean, you don't get an arena type of feeling you get when you pull in there, that the grandstands are wrapped completely around. It's a stadium feel, and you don't get it at any other racetrack. And I remember the first time they built it, this place was state-of-the-art, and it still is, and it's fast. But, again, it's funny you say that. What are some of your favorite memories of Route 66? For me, Sammy Hagar and the Van Halen guys played just up the road at the amphitheater one year, and I had them all come down and hang out. Michael Anthony and the whole gang came down for the day at the racetrack, and then that night I got to take all my crew guys up and go backstage and hang out with them. And those are the kind of things that stand out. I mean, winning there has always been awesome. I've loved when we won there because my owner, Don Schumacher, is from there.
Yes.
And we have a huge contingent there. And, you know, the Winter Circle celebrations are always epic there, but I'll never forget, you know, just having those guys come out and turning Sammy Hagar onto standing on the starting line and seeing that smile on his face afterwards.
It's got to be insane. And, of course, yeah, Don Schumacher from the Palatine, Arlington Heights area. We've done some stuff with him over the years. Now you guys are down in Texas. But, yeah, I mean, you look at it. So that's that common bond that I think motorsports have, the cars have, that speed has, that fast has. So you get with, you know, with a Sammy Hagar as a huge car enthusiast. We got a chance to – I do a lot of the food stuff here for WGN Radio, too. And believe it or not, you know, Sammy's a renaissance man, cars. He loves music, obviously. That's his career. And even food, too. He wrote it like a cookbook. So we interviewed him, and Michael Anthony has his own line of hot sauces, if you're familiar with that. So a lot of people have, you know, a bunch of different things going on. It is so cool to get them together. It's so cool to get you on, too. So for people who want to follow you, obviously, you know, they can watch you during the season of the races. They'll see you out here at Route 66 in the summer. But social media-wise, Facebook, all that modern stuff, how can people keep up with you?
It's RonCaps28 on Instagram and Twitter. Easy to find. And then I have a Facebook fan page. It's on Facebook that is just my name. You can't miss it. And, you know, I like to have a lot of fun with them. And sometimes I post stuff that I cringe a little bit when I put it out there. But then you see the reaction the fans get when they kind of know what you're doing in between races. And you never know. It might be at a concert, or it might be shooting a video side of the stage somewhere, or at a sporting event, just having fun. And so it's always, you know, it's good to hear the fans when they come up and go, hey, man, I love following you on Instagram or Facebook or whatever it may be.
Oh, you've got a ton of fans all over, and of course, they'll appreciate being able to hang out with you, see you here at Route 66 on the 20th anniversary, and keep up with your adventures on all the social media as well. So thanks for what you're doing, and thanks for jumping on WGN today.
Anytime, Dane. I appreciate you having me.